Darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media
and the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors, even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Well, good evening, America. We have got a great show, and I'm always enthused about every program we do, the subject matter and the guests, and we're very blessed to have great guests, and tonight is no exception. And we're going to talk about the Bonhoeffer movie, a movie that I strongly encourage you to see for a lot of reasons. And I want to welcome you to the Hamilton Corner. Alex McFarland here, sitting in for Abe Hamilton III. It's a great privilege to do so. And you are listening to the American Family Radio Network. Folks, you don't want to miss the next few moments of content because I think it will inspire you, may actually inform you about some 20th century church history. And there's a real opportunity here to see a film that is a piece of art. And I would encourage you to take your friends and your children. And let me cue this up as I bring our guest on, one of the producers of the Bonhoeffer film. I've heard the saying, more hangs on your obedience than you could possibly imagine. Well, let me put that in the context of Scripture. 1 Corinthians 15:58, one of my favorite verses in the Bible. 1 Corinthians 15:58 says, your labor in the Lord is not in vain. Think about that. And, you know, nowhere is that more vividly illustrated than in the life of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. And I became a Christian when I was in college, and right away as I began to, you know, learn about not only God's Word, but church history, my entire life I've heard about Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and he was a German minister, and he was a part of the resistance against the Third Reich, and he ultimately died for his beliefs. But Bonhoeffer has inspired so many people over the decades, and his story is one that it must be told, and thankfully it has been told. And one of the producers of the new Bonhoeffer movie, it's just come out by Theros Film Distribution and 1,900 screens. And I urge you, please support this film and make plans now to go see it this weekend. And we're going to learn all about the film, why it's important, why you and I and all of us should see it. One of the producers is John B. Scanlon. And he is an entertainment industry attorney and professional, and a part of the production company that has created a film that lots of people are talking about, Bonhoeffer. And it's such a privilege to have him on AFR right now. Mr. Scanlon, thank you for making time to be with us.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to join you.
Well, thank you. And I'm going to let you start. I'd love to hear about, you know, your own career trajectory. You know, introduce yourself, and then this project of a lifetime, really, that you have helped spearhead. So, tell us about yourself and the Bonhoeffer film.
Sure. Thank you. I started my own journey in film about 20 years ago. I shot a film in Uganda and got it on TV a couple of times, and was hooked by the power of film to inspire people through that visual and audio medium. And I was fortunate enough to be invited to join the lead producers, Banner and Camille Campouris, on this journey of making the Bonhoeffer film about 12 years ago. We spent a good deal of time trying to figure out how to fit Bonhoeffer's incredibly rich and dramatic life into a two-hour film. We took a bunch of different approaches. Finally, had the good fortune to connect with Todd Komernicki, who is the writer of the Clint Eastwood film Sully, starring Tom Hanks.
Also,
a producer of Elf. Yeah, he was a producer of Elf, which I'm sure everybody's going to see this holiday season.
Of course,
and,
yes.
and just an incredibly gifted artist and producer. And he really cracked the code. I think he was able to really get inside Bonhoeffer's mind and heart and unpack his story in a beautiful way in a script that electrified the Hollywood industry veterans that he showed it to. We were able to attract an amazing cast and crew. The crew includes John Matheson, who was the cinematographer on Gladiator 1 and 2, as well as many other films that I'm sure you've seen and enjoyed. He's just a beautiful visual artist. John Beard, set designer, and of course our incredible cast, headed by Jonas Dassel, who's this rising star in German cinema. And Todd made the decision early on that he wanted the good Germans in the film, the resistance heroes that are portrayed in the film, to be actual Germans. So so the accents you hear are real, and the German cast is really just electrifying. They're so good. And I think the movie that we produced is just a beautiful work of art, as you said. And that was really our emphasis. We wanted to make a film with excellence at every level. A friend of mine named Isaac Gay says, beauty is the apologetic. And I think we've made a beautiful film that is a terrific argument for faith in Jesus and for advancing the kingdom through action.
Wonderful. And I want to commend you about doing it with such excellence. I've seen the trailer and seen, spirit of full disclosure, I've not seen the movie yet. Plan to do it this week. And I urge our listeners to see it as well. But if, I want to commend you for doing it with excellence, you know, and not, I don't want to speak disparagingly, but a lot of faith-based films, maybe I shouldn't say a lot, but some, because I used to write movie reviews for Focus on the Family. I worked for Plugged In magazine, and I've written a number of film reviews. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you always want to be kind, but it's hard to get enthused over something that was, like, done on the cheap. And like you said, with your cast and the technical people behind the scenes, and I love that you're, you know, people with authentic German accents, this authenticity. This is why this film is going to stand the test of time. And I that's got to be pretty gratifying to you to know that you've created something that will touch the lives of people for a lot of years.
It really is. And I want to give credit to our lead producers again, Mano and Camille Campouris, and also to Todd Komernicki, who really were sold out to the idea that this had to be a film that was excellent in terms of its craftsmanship and its artistic level. I agree with you. Unfortunately all too easy to think of examples of films where it's done in a different way. But I do think that, you know, I do think it's important that as Christians we commit ourselves to excellence in this artistic field as in any other. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, part of the hard part is, for many centuries, you know, believers sort of dominated the arts, and that we sort of lost that. I think the only artistic expression that we sort of regularly practice now is a Sunday morning sermon, or a church service, if you could call that an artistic undertaking. And I think it is.
It should be.
But I think it really is, and it is, no matter whether you're just writing and delivering a simple sermon to a small congregation, or whether you're putting on a show, as many churches do. But the bottom line is that I think, unfortunately, a lot of films build only on that, you know, structure. They don't have any other artistic foundation to build on. And I'm thrilled and delighted that there's a kind of rising generation of filmmakers that are committed to telling stories that are true, beautiful, and good. Mm-hmm. I think this film can really set a standard for that and be a benchmark that other films can aspire to. At least that's my hope. And audiences love it, which is always great.
Yeah, from the screenings, I mean, the reviews and response has been exceptional, hasn't it?
It really has. We knew we had a hit on our hands. We've been showing it to small groups around the country. We showed it to our investors. We showed it to, you know, select groups, as one does. The response was really electrifying, and I'm delighted to say we have an A Cinema score. 93% positive rating on Rotten Tomatoes from over 500 verified ratings. It's really, really exciting audiences. It's tough opening the same week as the two biggest films of the year, Wicked and Gladiator 2. Mm-hmm. And then having to compete in addition to them with Moana 2 the following weekend. But we've held in there, and word of mouth is building a great audience for us. And I know that, even going into the Christmas season, we've got high expectations for continued turnout.
Well, we're just talking with John Scanlon. He's one of the producers of the Bonhoeffer film, if you're just tuning in. I urge you to see that. It's on 1900 screens. That's a great release. Before we have our first break, what's the website? I'm sure there's a website associated with the film.
There is. It's Angel Studios' website, and it's angel.com/Bonhoeffer, which is B-O-N-H-O-E-F-F-E-R. You can buy tickets there. You can find showings in your local cinema, and you can find other material related to the film and watch the trailer, too.
What about the life of Dietrich Bonhoeffer attracted you or inspired you to get involved in the making of this film?
I think that, if I could sum up his life in one word, which is difficult to do, I would say it's bravery or courage. He's just someone who faced some of the largest challenges one can face in life and stood up to history's greatest tyrant, arguably, and just lived his faith in an uncompromising way. He had many struggles and doubts along the way, and we see his on his journey in the film, we see how he grows toward the ultimate sacrifice that he makes at the end of his life. But following him on that journey and seeing how he engages with for instance, with the African-American church in Harlem when he was a seminary student in New York, is really, really interesting and fun to watch. But ultimately, I think the message of the film is, watch this movie, be inspired, and be Bonhoeffer brave in your own life.
Wow, that's a great challenge. You know, there's a famous quote, I've heard it all of my Christian life. Maybe it was used in the film. I don't know yet, not having seen it yet. But Bonhoeffer, they say that he said, when Christ calls a man, he bids him come and die. And there's a lot we can say about that quote. But I think we're in a generation, Mr. Scanlon, that is looking for something worth giving their life for. Like Bonhoeffer did. That's what one of the reasons I think it's resonating with so many people, especially young people, because, I mean, we want a cause. We want something to live for, and few people exemplify that like Dietrich Bonhoeffer.
Yeah, I think that's a very astute insight. I think that's exactly right. I just think that I think of all the films that inspired me as a young man and even as an older one, and usually come away from those sorts of films thinking, yeah, I wish I could be that person. I wish I could be that man of character, that man of faith. And I think we've got one of those films here because Bonhoeffer his life just crystallizes into this challenge for all of us to be that person, to be that best version of ourselves. And like rising to any other challenge, it really isn't possible without the superpower of faith and without understanding that apart from Christ, we can really do nothing. The Bonhoeffer believed that, and he lived it out. And I think this is just a great way to sort of see that unfold through the eyes of another person.
We've got a brief break coming up, but I want to dig down into this some more. And folks, we're talking with John Scanlon. He's an attorney, entertainment industry executive, and one of the producers of the Bonhoeffer film based on the true story. I mean, you know, what makes it so compelling is, I mean, this is history, and this is 20th century American church history that people need to be familiar with. It's directed by Todd Carmenicki. How do we pronounce that, John? I want to make sure I pronounce it correctly.
Carmenicki.
Starring Jonas Dassler, August Diehl, and Flula Borg. the Bonhoeffer movie. Stay tuned, folks. Go see this film. We're going to talk more with John Scanlon after this brief break on the American Family Radio Network.
We're going to dig a little deeper into the verse we started with, Matthew 6:24 and a few others. We cannot serve God and money. Now, generosity is a key piece of this as well. I think about what Ron Blue, the author, says often, and that is that giving actually loosens the grip that money can have over our lives.
Faith and Finance with Rob West, weekdays at 9 a.m. Central or on the AFR app.
Shining light into the darkness. This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
Bonhoeffer, pastor, spy, assassin. Now, if that is not a riveting title, I don't know what is. Hi, Alex McFarland here on the American Family Radio Network. We're having a conversation. I feel very privileged to be talking with attorney film producer John Scanlon. He is part of the Bonhoeffer movie that has come out. And I urge you to go see this. And let me just say, please support this film. You know, we're always hearing parents and pastors and faith leaders, Christians say, you know, I wish there was something wholesome, you know. And take your kids to see this. Take your student groups to see it. Because this is really some of the most vital 20th century church history. And Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and I know there were others, but during World War II, I mean, he did what the Word of God tells Christians to do. He literally laid down his life for the gospel and for truth, ultimately did pay with his life. But the film, in a beautiful way, in a historical and factual way, excellence at every step, the Bonhoeffer movie, brings his story to life for a new generation. We're talking with one of the producers, John Scanlon. And again, sir, thank you for being with us. You mentioned in our beginning conversation that it was something like a decade, maybe over a decade, from conception to release. I'm just curious, like, why did it take so long to get this film made?
You know, the bottom line is that Dietrich Bonhoeffer's life was so rich and so full that it was just a challenge to try to figure out an approach where you could tell a compelling story and sort of hit all the high notes, but do it in the amount of time you have for a theatrical film. Mm-hmm. So we basically experimented with a bunch of different approaches. We hired, you know, several teams of writers. We had a version in which it was a kind of dark psychological thriller. That mainly happened inside a jail cell, to a version that was sort of a James Bond, you know, mm-hmm. approach, sure. Emphasizing to a certain degree his relationship with Maria, his fiance. Mm-hmm. But ultimately it was Todd Komernicki's amazing script that kind of unlocked the secret to getting this thing onto screen, because not only was it a very compelling take on his life, but it was the kind of thing where, you know, you'd share it with an actor's agent or a key member of the crew, and they would say, "I absolutely have to be a part of this." Yeah. My favorite example is John Matheson, who is a legendary cinematographer who's worked on the Gladiator films and other big pictures. You know, he's normally working with a budget of, you know, $200 or $300 million, but he mm-hmm. said, I've got to do this film, Todd. So, you know, let me come on board and be your director of photography. And he did an amazing job. I think one thing you'll enjoy when you see it is it's just a visually stunning film. It just looks, there are frames in it that look like Dutch masters paintings, just the way they're lit and wow. colored. It's a beautiful film.
No doubt, no doubt. You know, what's interesting is even as you and I are doing this program, I've done three interviews today about a statistic that just in the last couple of months, Bible sales are up 22%. The overall publishing industry. Yeah, publishing is up 1%. Bible sales are up 22%. And the number one buyers are young people. So, you know, I see, even though I know that the film has had a long trajectory, and am I correct, you finished it in 22, is that right?
We shot it over the winter of 22-23. So we finished production, the beginning of 23. And then, of course, we were editing it for several months.
Isn't it just providential that the release of this film coincides with a real spiritual interest, spiritual hunger? Teens and 20-somethings are buying the Bible. I see something very sovereign that God could use to just touch a lot of lives.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And the wonderful thing about this film is that, we show Bonhoeffer from, a young boy all the way up to 39 years of age, which is when he was martyred. Mm-hmm. But our star, the man who plays him as an adult, Jonas Dassler, is 27, or he might have turned 28 since we wrapped. But he's a very young man himself. And I do absolutely think that this film is the kind of film that, as a young person, could change the trajectory of your life. And one of my producing partners, Camille Camporis, has been talking for years about her hope that this film would in particular inspire young people in Europe, which, is some would call it a post-Christian, field. Others more hopefully would call it pre-Christian. But the bottom line is it's a very dark place spiritually, and there's not a lot of hope there. And I really do think this film could have a revolutionary impact there, and I hope it does.
That's great. We really need to pray for that. That's great. And the spiritual state of Europe right now, we could talk about maybe at a later date. But yeah, I could see God using it in a great way. We're almost out of time, folks. We're talking with John Scanlon. He's one of the producers of the brand new movie Bonhoeffer. It's on 1900 screens. Folks, support this film. Please go see this film, not only because we would love to see the film succeed, but this is a story that every person needs to know about. So last question before I let you go, Mr. Scanlon. Where can people find a theater in their area? Where can they get tickets? What's the optimum way for people to go online and find where they can see the film?
The easiest way is to go to the Angel Studios website, which is angel.com/Bonhoeffer, B-O-N-H-O-E-F-F-E-R. And you'll be able to find a showtime and a location near you, and you'll even be able to buy tickets through the site. So that's your best shot at one-stop shopping.
Well, our prayers are with you. I wish you much success, and I want to thank you not only for being with us today, but this great piece of work that you've accomplished. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to share this with you.
We look forward to visiting again. Alex McFarland here, folks, on the American Family Radio Network, sitting in for Abe Hamilton. Very honored to do so. We're going to change gears a little bit, and we're going to talk with Linda Hansen about hopefully the demise of wokeness. Now, before we bring Linda to the mic, I want to say that if you recognize my voice, it might be from the show Exploring the Word that is heard every day live Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m. Central, 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the American Family Radio Network. All over the landscape, you can find the show Exploring the Word. And for all that listen, I get a lot of emails from people. They'll say, we listened to you on Hamilton. We listened to you on Exploring the Word. We really appreciate that. And we refer you to Exploring the Word and all the great programming on the American Family Radio Network. But right now, we're going to visit a little bit with Linda Hansen. And Linda Hansen has a topic that we're going to discuss, which is really companies turning away from DEI and wokeness, at least I hope. But Ms. Hansen, thank you for holding and welcome to the American Family Radio Network.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, yes. Well, it's an honor to have you. Now, you're an author, a business strategist, a leadership coach. Before we get into DEI and wokeness, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, the quick snapshot, first part of adult life, I raised and homeschooled six children and honor. So I was an early pioneer in the homeschool movement, but then also in the conservative movement with, you know, Concerned Women for America, Homeschool Legal Defense Association, all those early pioneers in this conservative movement, and really a blessing to be part of that. But then as my children grew, I got more involved in politics. I was always, always interested in politics and policy. I was a GOP county chair for many years, as some of them, you know, were away from the home and I had more time, and then assistant district chair, and I was very involved in the flip of Wisconsin in 2010, and during that time, I also got to know Herman Cain, and sure. I was one of two people who encouraged him to run for president, and I served as his deputy chief of staff for his presidential campaign in 2012, which was an absolute honor and pleasure, and we were kind of woke, or we were MAGA before MAGA was cool.
Yes.
You know, and it was great. He was wonderful. And since that time, I've been able to do multiple things all over the country in terms of issue advocacy, coalition development, you know, regulatory reform and things. But in addition to my life mission to know Christ and make him known, and to promote freedom and liberty throughout the land. And one of the things God has called me to do along that mission is with Prosperity 101, and that is my heart's cry to get employers educating employees about public policy issues that affect their jobs. And I believe it's important to do this in a way that is nonpartisan. It doesn't tell them what they have to think or how they have to vote, but it helps kind of unlock their appreciation for the freedoms that we have in America and the basic policies of freedom and human flourishing, and mm-hmm. then how they protect that. And I believe that's part of keeping the soil fertile for the gospel, so that Amen. We can have a free America, which allows us to share all over the world.
You know what? I would guarantee that you and I have been at some of the same events, because, Linda, 20 years ago, I began to go to, like, the Council for National Policy, CNP,
yes.
and mm-hmm. the Values Voter Summit, and I began to yes. meet people like Phyllis Schlafly and James Dobson, and I had dinner one night with Herman Cain, the president. This was just before he went public with his desire to run for president, uh-huh. and people like Edwin Meese. So let me ask this question, and I want to get to the topic of from woke to what as companies move away from DEI. But here's one of the questions that I would ask you, because I can tell you've, somewhat like myself, been kind of ringside on the Christian conservative movement for the last couple of decades.
Yes.
Do
yes.
you feel like, with the overwhelming victory of Donald Trump November 5th, won by more than 10 million votes, are we finally, after, you know, maybe two or three decades, conservatives have been working and praying kind of in the shadows oftentimes, but suddenly there's traction and decades of prayer and hard work are beginning to bear fruit, and bear fruit big? Do you think that's what we're seeing?
I do see that to a degree, and I'll tell you, you know, I'm old enough to remember the Reagan years, and, you know, there was a huge conservative push, and, you know, even if we go back into the Jesus People movement of the 70s,
sure.
right,
sure.
you know, we had all of these things happening, but they wither away, and I tell people, yes, you know, we have a wind. We have the wind behind us now. God is giving us an opportunity. And if we don't take it and stay in it, we can lose it just as fast as we got it, right? And, or as it seems we got it, you know, you pray for something for years and years and years, and then it happens, right? So, but, you know, people tell me, oh, you know, people won't get complacent. They'll stay engaged as a citizen, and they've seen God move. And I say, you know, the Israelites saw the Red Sea parted before their eyes. They got manna in the desert. And still, they said, we want to go back to Egypt, and we need a golden calf, right? So
yeah.
it's we are so human, that when things become a little easier, we can become complacent. So, yes, I see God answering our prayer, and we see it in so many ways. The election results, we see it from the assassination attempts. We see it from the rise in Bible sales. We see it from the rise in the Gen Z voters. We see it, but unless we keep that foot on the grass, on the gas, I should say, and be mm-hmm. able to, you know, stay in prayer and stay in commitment to our activism, we will lose it. We have a window of time here to really shift some of these policies that are destroying our nation, and that window could close rapidly. Unless we are absolutely proactive about keeping that window open.
You know, and by the way, thank you. I want to say thank you for being a part of, like you say, advocating for truth, for God and country all these years. So thank you. And you're right.
Well, thank you as well. And we have been in the same room before. We've met before, but it's been years.
Okay. So let me ask you this. Do you feel like, why is it, here's how I want to ask it, why is it that some people are more committed to that which is false than we Christians are committed to that which is true? I mean, you know, years ago we talked about liberalism and then more socialism, Marxism, and it just amazes me how many on the woke progressive left, I mean, they'll give their lives to a worldview that is false. And yet, you know, conservative Christians, people of principle and morals and God's truth, I mean, we've got the truth of Almighty God, and yet people are very apathetic sometimes. Why is that, in your opinion?
Well, our sin nature, we have a sin nature, and it's easy for us to be complacent and take the blessings of God for granted. And I think that we have done that. The other thing I see, obviously when Satan can get a foothold, when the enemy can get a foothold into the culture, I mean, just think of the seven mountains of culture. Do we have any one of those mountains as conservatives or as Christians? Does the Judeo-Christian worldview stand at the top of any one of those seven mountains of culture? Not right now, but we're getting there. You know, we're getting there.
And I would say we're
getting there. You know, at least we're climbing now. At least people are more aware that there's seven mountains of culture that we need to go get. It isn't just
Hold
so
that
bright.
Thought. We've got to take a break. When we come back, folks, we're going to talk about what the seven mountains are and how you can help take those mountains. Stay tuned.
1 million moms wishes to thank you for letting us know about the Wayfair commercial in which Kelly Clarkson unnecessarily insinuates profanity. It's inappropriate that Wayfair produced a controversial advertisement instead of a wholesome one. We care about what our children hear, and since children repeat things, let Wayfair know that this ad was irresponsible. Sign our petition to urge Wayfair to cancel it at 1millionmoms.com. That's 1millionmoms.com.
The Hamilton Quarter podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net. Back to the Hamilton Quarter on American Family Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. And I would be remiss if I did not wish you, each and every one, a Merry Christmas. I hope you do have a joyful, Christ-filled Christmas. And this month of December, you know, you utilize it to pray, reflect, witness, be a blessing to somebody, and to help encourage people around you. Because the first guest, John Scanlon, was talking about courage. And let me say this. When I teach my philosophy classes, I teach on what Plato said courage was. He said, it's knowing the right thing to do and being willing to do it. So I think the majority of people, deep down, they know the right thing to do, but it does take courage and initiative to be willing to do it. And Christmas is a reminder that really Jesus Christ, he is worthy of the best we can give and all we can give, just as Christ gave his life for our redemption. I think we need to give our lives for his great commission. And somebody who has done that is Linda Hansen, and she's our guest right now. And Linda, I want to thank you for being with us on the show, but even more importantly, all that you do for God and country. Before we go too much farther, Linda, tell us, what is Prosperity 101? Tell us what that is and where people can find you online.
101.com, prosperity101.com, and find me there. Please do. Please let me hear from you. And Prosperity 101 was born as I was, you know, working in politics and doing things, and I heard business owners tell me, you know, they were going to leave the state if a business-friendly governor wasn't elected. And I realized, this is years ago, even before Herman Cain ran for president, and he was one of my early advisors. That's kind of how I got to know him so well. But I understood immediately that millions of people go to voting booths and vote themselves right out of their jobs because they are unaware of the policies that affect their paychecks or their personal freedom. And one time I was speaking to, you know, 500 top managers at a major business, and the Lord told me, you need to write a book, because the people in this room understand what you're saying, but the people who stock the shelves do not. So I wrote my first book, developed a program to help employers educate employees about basic issues, taking people through the foundations of prosperity. First, what is prosperity? It's not money. It's human flourishing and freedom. And why do we have that in America? It's because we've got these amazing documents that have been influenced by Judeo-Christian heritage, and I believe they're divinely inspired. But so we have this system of government that allows for this. So we have the foundations of prosperity, the policies of prosperity, basic economic policies, and then how to protect their prosperity by becoming informed, involved, and impactful. So in a sense, this course is the fifth grade civics class that the last three generations haven't gotten, but yet it is absolutely designed to help them understand how all of this impacts their daily life, their paycheck, and, you know, their ability to have freedom in their life. It is nonpartisan. It never tells someone how to vote. It doesn't even tell them what they have to believe. It does the instructions with questions where they kind of can figure it out for themselves, right? But it opens up communication in the workplace. And I, you know, Dawson Trotman, who started the Navigators Ministry, was the first one who said, they don't care how much you know until they care. They know how much you care. And I have seen that when employers share this information in their workplace and they start talking to their employees about these things from a very basic sense, like, this matters to you, it matters to your paycheck. I need to keep my company profitable so that you can be profitable. Those just basic conversations, it increases communication. And then that helps with loyalty, engagement, and retention. So it helps the bottom line of the company and it helps the country. So it's, you know, like I said, I feel like it's keeping the soil fertile for the gospel, because we also then, people go to a voting booth and they're a more informed voter. And it's just really a very basic reintroduction. We have all of these people who've come through the educational system in America all these years that you and I have been fighting, you know, for freedom and God and country. And we've seen that they really have no idea about basic American civics, basic America, you know, in terms of our founding and why we have such an amazing country. And we need to re-educate them. I mean, if employers don't do it, I tell employers, please grow this movement with me, because if employers don't do it, who's doing it? These 20, 30, 40-year-olds in the workplace, they're already out of college. They're already out of school. Who's going to help them understand truth unless they do it in the workplace? And all politics is local, and nothing more local than where you go to work every day.
So let me ask you this. We've seen political correctness, wokeness, influence corporate America. And, you know, my wife and I, we don't even shop at places like Target anymore because, I mean, my goodness, I think the last time that we ever went in a Target, and that was years ago, they had the most objectionable, just really pornographic clothing for elementary schoolers. I'm not going to go into that, but I guess here's my question. All of these deviant organizations that advocate for policies that are so detrimental to people, GLSEN and GLAAD and the egregiously misnamed human rights campaign,
right.
People United for the Separation of Church and State. How did they get into America's boardrooms? I mean, you know, I've got another story I want to tell you that's going to amaze you, I think. But, I mean, these major corporations, you know, Walmart, Ford Motor Company, you would think their goal is to sell more retail, increase the bottom line. So how did these people with just in-your-face political agendas so effectively get into the boardrooms?
Well, follow the money. I would say follow the money. And then also remember, you know, we are sinful people. We're all sinners in need of a savior. So, mm-hmm. you know, the carrot in front of this, you know, the carrot with the stick is often appealing to people, and they throw their morals and good judgment out the window sometimes when it seems profitable, or they're threatened, or they're boycotted, or, you know, whatever. But I would say that part of the problem there is the complacency and silence of the church and of conservatives, because, you know, we just let them run over us as a nation, right? It's I have a poster pack on my website. I mean, so for people to go to the website, prosperity101.com, they can get my book. I have a short 12-lesson online course that I can license out to businesses to use in their workplace. But I also have, you know, a free ebook, and I have a simple poster pack that people can use. One of the posters is just the Bill of Rights, and it says, are you voting for a person who will protect your rights? I cannot tell you how many times in the last 4 years especially I've had a business person tell me, oh, I couldn't hang that poster in my workplace. It's too political. Which I say, we just gave the enemy the ground. You know,
yeah.
Because to put the Bill of Rights up is too political. And we wonder how come we have DEI and CRT and all this in all the workplaces.
Mm-hmm.
Because we gave that ground up. So we gave that mountain. You know, we were talking before about the mountains of culture. And just
right.
before we move, you know, lose time for your listeners, you know, the mountains of culture, arts and entertainment, business, education, family, government, mm-hmm. media, and religion. You know, God's
right.
been removed from every mountain of influence, and it's obviously had a negative impact on America. And so as believers and as even, you know, those who aren't born-again Christian believers, but they may be Judeo-Christian or they may just be conservative, like, honestly, we need to take these mountains back, and we do it by re-educating, but we can't do it by, you know, in your face, you got to believe this. We have to educate them. You know, we have to help them know how to think about these things, not what to think. And they will come to the right decision. You know, Herman Cain used
yeah.
to say that all the time, and people will make the right decision if they're given the right information. And
yes.
now I think it's great, too, that we have so many more media options.
Mm-hmm.
Even though many of us have been canceled or whatever
yeah.
over time, but I think that will open up. And there is a thirst. I also think being able to take these mountains back begins with spiritual revival, which we're seeing.
It really does.
Yes, we're seeing
and also,
this, and that's the core.
Let me say, also teaching biblical worldview, and folks, if you're just tuning in,
yes.
Alex McFarland here talking with Linda Hansen. Linda, back in the late 80s, I began to be involved in youth ministry and then got married, and my wife and I, she's in the medical field, but we've been in youth ministry really since the 90s. But I would teach it this way, and I would talk about the eight engines that drive the culture. And to my knowledge,
uh-huh.
I had never heard, I didn't know Lance Wallnau, and I had not read David Noble yet. But I would tell all my youth from the late 80s, I would say, look, there's the home, the church, the classroom, the media, the marketplace, the judiciary, the arts, the sciences. And I would say, look, you're going to have a foot in three of those realms, the home and the family. And then as a Christian, you'll be involved in church. But then there's your career. And there's the classroom, that's education, media, that could be journalism or broadcasting or film production, perhaps. And then there's the marketplace, which is business, and there are 10,000 iterations of what business might be. The judiciary, law, politics, the arts, and the sciences could be medicine. But I would tell kids, look, wherever you go, take your biblical worldview with you. Maybe you're never going to be a preacher in a pulpit, fair enough, but you'll be a business person in the marketplace, or you might be in medicine or the sciences or education, or certainly we need Christians in law and politics. And years later, I worked with Del Tackett on a thing called the Truth Project, and Del Tackett would say, look in any direction, any field, and God has spoken. All of that to say this, don't you think it's very empowering when Christians of all ages, certainly young people, when they realize that our biblical worldview really does touch every field of endeavor? I mean, that's pretty empowering, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we can see through history the people who chose to stand for Christ in their area of influence. And I appreciate the fact that you mentioned, like, David Noble. I mean, what a wonderful ministry, yes. Summit Ministries, and the book, Understanding the Times. And I think back to also, you know, Michael Ferris starting a Homeschool Legal Defense Association and the constitutional law class, right? These are things that everyone should understand. And, you know, we have given that ground over to the enemy as we have allowed the secular culture to permeate the church. And we have neglected, I mean, I'm talking as a body of believers, we have so neglected true discipleship of our young people where they, you know, understand the plan and purpose of God's plan for their life and the influence that we can have. I mean, it is incredible when believers step up in every walk of life, you know, whether they're a dentist, a teacher, an auto mechanic, you know, a sewer maintenance man,
sure,
whatever, it does not matter. When believers step up, you know, we are the salt and light. And part of the reason we've lost the culture is because we haven't, you know, we've lost our saltiness. And so to be able to stand up and say, no, you know, okay, we let some ground go, but no, we are absolutely not letting the enemy have this country. We are not letting the enemy have our families. We are not letting the enemy have our businesses. And no, you know, we stand on the Lord's side.
And we are not going to let the enemy have our future.
Exactly. Good point. Good point.
Amen.
Yeah, we are not.
You know, time fleets away, and I want to visit again. You mentioned Herman Cain, and it was my privilege to meet him a little bit. In a way, do you think Herman Cain, because he was a non-traditional politician, very viable, very intelligent, he almost was a precursor to Donald Trump, wasn't he?
Oh, absolutely. I often say we were MAGA before MAGA was cool, but
cool.
And also we set the table for Trump. You know, he was number one for 6 weeks until, of course, he started polling ahead of President Obama, and you can't have a black conservative polling ahead of Obama. And so they started taking him out. Well, we didn't have Twitter back then. It was just beginning. We didn't really have Twitter. And
we're almost out of time. Linda, I'm so sorry. We're about out of time. Quickly give your website.
Prosperity101.com. Prosperity101.com.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for being with us, Linda. And folks, thanks for listening. Alex McFarland here for the American Family Radio Network. Please go see the Bonhoeffer movie. God bless you.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.